Welcome to the Sports Zone on WHRU LP 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. I'm your host, Anthony Collada, and we've got another packed show for you guys this week, taking a look at championship weekend in the NFL, keeping up with our top five performances around the NBA this week, and of course, finishing up the show with our LeBron watch in his quest to become the NBA's all-time leading scorer. In this week's episode, we started off with a kind of what in the world was going on, and it goes to the game in Loyola, Chicago against DeQuincy College. The officials had to put a stop to the game after what they thought was an Uber Eats delivery guy walked onto the court with McDonald's. Everyone was so confused. The broadcast is like, what is going on here? And it turns out that it was just all some like played out skit. I don't think he was actually an Uber Eats driver. I think he just picked up some McDonald's and he just walked out onto the court. They say that there was a bunch of people, you know, with microphones and cameras to make sure they could capture all the audio, capture all the different, you know, whatever going on. The one thing it's like, what possesses you to think about that? Let me impersonate an Uber Eats driver and get onto the court. Like, there's got to be an easier way than being an Uber Eats driver. Now you had to go buy McDonald's, and now what are you going to do with the McDonald's? Because now they confiscated that. So it's like, really, what are you doing? There's got to be a better way. But it's, I don't know, just weird moment, and I'm like, what is going on here? So, yeah, that's kind of our weird, you know, what the heck moment this week. And then going back to our show last week with the issue with the chains, I actually think I might have found a slightly better solution than the old-fashioned chains. And it's actually a system that is kind of already in play right now. For the last 5 years, the NFL has been putting like little technology chips inside of all of the footballs. This has been going on for the last 5 years. It's a tiny chip. It weighs, you know, just over 3 grams, so it doesn't affect the football, but it is the same technology that the NFL is putting in the players' shoulder pads, in their helmets that track, you know, how fast the player moves, where they're at on the field. So all those StatCast stats that the NFL has been providing us the last several years, for all these advanced metrics, well, it's the same technology in the football. So I do think it's still a little bit of ways away that technology is going to be able to spot the ball, determine first downs. But if you've already got a tracking system in the ball, now if you can find a way to maybe sync that chip with like a first down marker and, you know, you get that technology working, now maybe the ball can actually tell you first down, you know, short, whatever, on the field. So I actually thought it was kind of interesting that after all that chain debacle, I actually stumbled upon a possible solution. So I might not have all the answers, but I'm definitely going to find you guys one. So I think that's a decent solution, something I think the NFL needs to look into, because like I said last week, it's kind of ridiculous that we're still using two sticks and some chain to determine first downs. But we might have a solution there. We will see kind of how that progresses as technology continues to progress as well. Championship weekend in the NFL this week. We started it off in the NFC with the matchup between the 49ers and the Eagles. And I think we were kind of robbed of this one almost with Brock Purdy, the starting quarterback for the Niners, getting hurt on the second offensive play of the game. Hassan Reddick, the Pro Bowl defensive end for the Eagles, came rushing around the left end, and as Purdy was going to throw, his arm was in like the back throwing motion, and Reddick took the arm, almost bent it backwards, and then his arm still came forward to try to throw the ball. And here, if you watch the replay, that's definitely an injury. For someone that has thrown baseballs, throwing footballs, just, you know, playing catch, whatever, your arm's not supposed to move that way. Like, I'm not putting it on him like, oh, he was soft, he didn't want to be in the game, you know, seventh round rookie, the lights are too big. None of that. Like, he was hurt. So, you know, second play of the game, now your starting quarterback's hurt. It brought in Josh Johnson, who's been in the league for 15 years. It's his fourth time on the 49ers. He's just one of those guys that, you know, if a team is absolutely desperate, that they need another guy on the roster at quarterback, This has been the guy around the NFL. 15 different teams. It's just, I think he's smart. You know, he can run a little bit. He gets a good idea of the playbook. So Josh Johnson ended up getting thrown into the game. And Hassan Reddick, I think, proceeded to knock him out of the game, too. I'm not exactly sure if it was on the specific play, but Reddick, he came around the corner, sacked Josh Johnson, and even strip-sacked him as he was going to the ground. So an athletic play there by the Pro Bowler. I'm not sure if that was the exact play, but Josh Johnson ended up having to leave the game with a concussion. So now, the 49ers, who had Trey Lance to start the season, he was hurt after game one or two. Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, came back, got hurt again. Now Brock Purdy was in there. He's been undefeated, leading them to the NFC Championship game. Well, now he goes down, and they were only left with Josh Johnson. So after Josh Johnson got hurt with the concussion, they had to throw Brock Purdy back in there, or it was just going to be Christian McCaffrey running the Wildcat or their fullback Kyle Juszczyk just kind of freeballing it out there almost. So they had to put Purdy out there just to at least give the Eagles something to think about. But you can even see on the sideline, Purdy was telling Shanahan, like, I can't throw. So, and he clearly couldn't because he only attempted three passes in the second half, and two of them were screens. It's like 2 yards in front of him. So at that point, you have a quarterback that can't throw, and now you're trailing. So how do you, you know, kind of get back into a game faster? Well, you have to throw the ball. So at that point, it was just the Christian McCaffrey show, just running the ball, hoping to, you know, maybe break one or just move down the field and control the clock. I mean, it wasn't a complete blowout. It was 31-7, but it was, you know, as close as it can be for a team that doesn't have a quarterback anymore. But here, I mean, on the flip side, you got to look at Philly and you got to give them credit. You know, they took it right to the San Francisco 49ers defense, who's been great all season. They're number one against the pass. They're number one against the rush. And Philly just ran all over them like they did to almost every other team, like they did last week to the Giants. They ran for 148 yards and four touchdowns. Miles Sanders scored two. Hurts ran one in, and Boston Scott. So everyone got in on the action running the ball. Kenneth Gainwell touched the ball 10-plus times as well. So it was just an overall balanced attack from Philly. They were leading the entire game, so there wasn't any real necessity to push the ball down the field and, you know, really try to rack up a bunch of yards and scoring. So it was just hand the ball off, control the clock, because they knew the 49ers just weren't going to be able to do anything on the offensive side of the ball. So I think we were robbed of what could have been a fantastic NFC Championship game. But, you know, nonetheless, injuries happen. I mean, here you got Purdy and Johnson on the offensive side of the ball, and then even on the defensive side of the ball, Fred Warner, the probably top two linebacker in the NFL, and Nick Bosa, probably a top two, you know, pass rusher in the NFL, both on the Niners defense. They both, you know, were down, hurt a little bit with an injury. I think they both ended up playing, but neither was 100%. So it's like, you know, your two quarterbacks and then your two best defensive players, it's just not a recipe for success. And Hassan Reddick, as I mentioned, two sacks. He got that strip sack on Johnson as well. He led the way for the defense. And, you know, now Philly's on their way to the Super Bowl. And, you know, before we get into who they'll be playing in the AFC Championship game, we are going to pause real quick for station ID. You're listening to 101.5 FM, WHRU-LP Huntley Community Radio. And in the AFC, we got what was a rematch of the AFC Championship game last year between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Kansas City Chiefs. And this was one of those games that there's a lot of excitement, lots of trash talk, lots going into this one. You had Cincinnati who, you know, they have a reason to be confident. Burrow, he's 3-0 on the road in the playoffs, 3-0 against Mahomes in his career. So, you know, it got so crazy that you had Cincinnati Bengals players calling Arrowhead Stadium, the Chiefs Stadium, they're calling it Burrowhead. It's like, has anyone ever seen how history works, that if you make comments like that against, you know, a team in an AFC championship, like, don't you know what's going to happen? And, you know, Eli Apple talking on Twitter, and here all the Chiefs, you know, they were like, hey, we'll see you at Burrowhead. You know, they weren't running from it. They didn't care. They were like, you know what? You guys can talk all you want. We're going to show you on the field. And that's pretty much what they did. I mean, it was a much lower scoring game than I think a lot of people expected, certainly much lower than I expected it to be. I mean, here, the Chiefs, it was a lone field goal in the first quarter that got the scoring, and then they kicked another one in the second quarter, and Cincinnati then scored right before half. So, you know, you went into halftime at like 6-3 or something. It was low scoring and just not a whole lot going on. Travis Kelce did end up finding the end zone. He continues to just be the number one option for the Chiefs. He was actually questionable coming into the game with back spasms. I think it was up until about an hour and a half, 2 hours before game time that they finally said, yeah, he's going to play. But it didn't stop him, didn't slow him down at all. He racked up 7 catches, 78 yards, and a touchdown, and he passed Julian Edelman for the second most receiving yards in postseason history. He's now up over 1,442 yards. He's only trailing behind the greatest receiver of all time, Jerry Rice. He's still got a ways to go. We're looking at about another 800 yards with Jerry Rice at 2245. So obviously one more game left. Kelce's not getting 800 in a game. But I think he's still young enough. I think he's still playing at a high enough level. He's obviously on a good enough team that the Chiefs have made the AFC Championship game 3 years in a row, 2 Super Bowls. So I definitely expect Kelce to get closer to that number. 800 yards, probably you're looking at least 8 more games. I mean, if he's 100 average. So still got some time, I think, in Kelce's career. But, you know, to be number 2 in all-time receiving, you're a tight end even. You know, you've never seen that before. And to be behind the likes of Jerry Rice, you're in good company there. Cincinnati, they were leading actually before the half at 13-6. And then they came out and... No, I'm sorry. KC was leading 13-6, and then the Bengals came back out after halftime and immediately scored to T. Higgins down the right sideline. So then it was 13-13, and now you're starting to see, okay, maybe it wasn't as high scoring and as you know, kind of fire-ish as we kind of expected, but still a close game, very back and forth. And then at that point in the second half, it was kind of just blow for blow at that point. Marquez Valdes-Scantling had a fantastic game, up over 100 yards. He scored a touchdown at the end of the third quarter, and then the Bengals answered right back, I think, 5 or so minutes later with a Samaje Perine touchdown to start the fourth quarter, and then the scoring just kind of stopped. It was very back and forth. The defenses started picking it up in the fourth quarter, and you can really boil, you know, the last, let's say, half. We'll call it the last half, but there's a couple of big plays that really stand out that everyone is still talking about on Monday. It's just, you know, the 3rd and 7 play that the Chiefs, they ended up, you know, it was an incomplete pass. It would have led to a 4th down and a punt. The play was over and done, and then the referees went back and, you know, waved it off, no play, and they replayed the 3rd and 7. It was a huge confusion because it's like, well, what the heck? There was no whistle. No one tried to stop the play. The play went through, and now because it's incomplete, now we have to replay the play. Well, if you actually look at the replay, the referee was trying to come off the sideline and wave the play dead. Just it was so loud at Arrowhead that nobody heard him. So there's one little mistake. So then you have to replay that 3rd and 7, and then Eli Apple, the corner for the Bengals, ends up getting a holding call on the very next play. So now it's an automatic 1st down. So you got two plays like that it's, you know, a little questionable. The Eli Apple, it wasn't a hold, or it was a hold. It was absolutely a hold, but it's like it's one of those things that, well, if you didn't get us here on that last play, this play doesn't happen. So now we're getting the ball back. So it's like compounding mistakes for one, you know, somewhat missed call, you know, little controversy there, but it's like when you start to press in that, you get in that mindset, it's like, well, they just made a mistake. Now we got to get it back. And now you make another mistake, and now they just start compounding. You've got on the offensive side of the ball, the Bengals were kind of gypped a little bit too on a intentional grounding penalty that Burrow threw the ball right into the dirt to his running back, who was only another 3 yards in front of him. They ruled it an intentional grounding. I don't think that was the right call. I think of all the bad calls that there's a lot of conversation going on right now, I think that was the worst. But when you really look at it, there's just, you had the roughing the passer or the unnecessary roughness at the very end of the game where Joseph Osai, the rookie defensive lineman for the Bengals, Mahomes was out of bounds. He was 2 feet, 2-5 feet out of bounds, and he shoves him. It's like, that's a penalty. And you see that with all of these questionable calls in the game. It's like, they were actually penalties, but it's like I said, it's that mindset. It's, oh, we had a bad one here. Now we have to go make up for it. Well, now you start pressing and you start kind of getting a little stressed out there that now you have to make up for mistake after mistake, and they just start piling on. And that's ultimately what got them, was the unnecessary roughness, pushed them right into field goal range for Harrison Butker to kick in the game winner. I think that the refs here, I was even questioning it during the game. I'm like, wow, the referees are doing everything they can to get Kansas City to the Super Bowl. Here, when you get five penalties on the Bengals in the fourth quarter and none on the Chiefs, here, there's numbers to look at, and you know, you can question it, but at the end of the day, they were penalties. It's just, you have to deal with it. You know, you've got to deal with it, and you've got to figure it out. But at the end of the day, you've got to protect your quarterback, and you've got to put up points. Burrow was sacked five times against a defense that really isn't all that great. Their corners are just okay. Their pass rush is just okay. But the Cincinnati Bengals offense couldn't get anything going. Kansas City stayed back and too high, so they couldn't get the ball deep down the field. Ja'Marr Chase, you know, was kept underneath, and that was it. So Kansas City advances to the Super Bowl to take on the Philadelphia Eagles, and I think you've got a little bit of a two sides of the coin here. You got Kansas City, who's been there before. You know, the last 3 years, they've been right there. And then you've got the Eagles, who a much younger team. Their last visit to the Super Bowl was back in 2018 when they beat the Tom Brady-led Patriots with Nick Foles at quarterback. And there's only four players remaining from that 2018 team. You've got the center, Jason Kelce, your right tackle, Lane Johnson, and then two defensive linemen, Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham. So you got a couple veterans, but outside of that, the rest of the team is brand new. They're young, and you know, they're ready to go. But something that it's really going to bring up questions is how easy the schedule that Philadelphia had. I mean, you had, you know, the regular season, you're about middle of the road in terms of strength of schedule, but then you get into the playoffs and you beat the Giants, who, let's be honest, it wasn't a competitive game. The Giants really aren't that great of a team. And then you take on the 49ers, who don't have any quarterbacks. So it's got to be probably two of the easiest victories that any team has gotten to get to a Super Bowl. So, and then you had, on the flip, you got Kansas City, who had to take on the Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals. So, you know, there's a lot there, too, that it's like, well, what's Philly going to do when they actually have to play a real team? But I think it just speaks to the fact that AFC was just so much better than the NFC this year. But if Philly's going to, you know, if they're going to win this game, they need to continue to do what they've done all year. Run the ball, control the clock. Mahomes, he's still hobbled, but he's got 2 weeks to recover. So we'll kind of see how that plays out there. I'm getting ready, though. You know, last game of the season, Super Bowl, should be exciting. As we kick over to the NBA now, with our top five moments, I do have an honorable mention on Sunday night's game with the Grizzlies. Ja Morant put in a triple-double with 27 points, 15 assists, and 10 rebounds. Jaren Jackson added 28 points in a 112-100 win over the Pacers. They were trailing in the first half. They looked like crap. And then in the second half, they figured it out and put some good numbers on the board there. The number five moment, though, this week is Kawhi Leonard scoring 32 points in a victory for the Clippers. That was their fifth straight win. The Clippers did end up losing on Sunday, so that win streak is over now. But here you got the Clippers at 28-25. They're sitting fourth in the West. Kawhi Leonard's finally healthy. He's back, and he's consistently playing. That Clippers team's dangerous. John Wall, you know, he might have a little bit of juice left in him. I think they're still looking at some additions. Clippers, a team to definitely look out for in the West as we head towards the All-Star break. Julius Randle, 37 points in an overtime victory over the East-leading Boston Celtics on Thursday. Randle, he continues to get better every single year. And this year, he's now averaging about 25 points, 11 rebounds, and he's even kind of picked up the facilitating a little bit with four assists. So all-star there for the Knicks, really playing well this season. Our number three moment of this week is comes in the game on Saturday between the two best centers in the NBA. Joel Embiid outdueled Nikola Jokic, putting in 47 points, 18 rebounds, and 5 assists, while Jokic was held to just 24 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists. These are the two guys, you know, they're the best centers in the league. There's a lot of conversation about all-star starters and whatnot, and Embiid, he took it to Jokic. Obviously, I think Sixers are a little bit better of a team, but here, Philly, they beat Denver 126-119, and that was on the back of Joel Embiid. Number two moment this week goes to Giannis Antetokounmpo, who scored 18 points in the first quarter on his way to a 50-piece on Sunday against New Orleans Pelicans. The Bucks right atop the East. Giannis, probably one of the best players in the NBA. He just continues to go to work, and this time he turned it on right from the beginning, and he never shut it off. And then number one, Damian Lillard continues to stay hot as he dropped a season-high 60 against Utah on Wednesday. He is now averaging over 30 points a game. He's number seven in the NBA in points per game, and he just continues to put the Portland Trail Blazers on his back. He wants to win. They got to help him out. But Dame, he continues to do it, and I feel like every week we say, oh, new season high for Damian Lillard. So one of my favorite point guards. I look forward to seeing how he continues to go the rest of the season. Little weird moment here. Steph Curry was ejected on Wednesday for throwing his mouthpiece. But this isn't the first time that's happened. This is actually the third time in Steph Curry's career that he's been ejected, and all three times have involved him throwing a mouthpiece. You got the one on Wednesday night. You had one back in 2017 against the Memphis Grizzlies, and he was also ejected from Game 6 of the NBA Finals in 2016 against the Cavaliers for throwing his mouthpiece. It's just weird that it's like that's how he decides to let out his frustration rather than, you know, call the referees a bunch of colorful words to get thrown out. He just throws the mouthpiece. So to each his own, I guess. Quick note in the NHL, as we have to say goodbye to another legend in sports, Bobby Hall, the Golden Jet, passed away Sunday night, Monday morning, at the age of 84. The Jet, 12-time All-Star, 2-time Hart Trophy winner, and he is right up atop the ranks of Chicago Blackhawks all-time, as he's number one in goals with 604. He's number one in game-winning goals with 98. Most hat tricks in Blackhawks history with 28, and he's number three in points in Blackhawks history with 1,153. One of the best players in NHL history, really one of those guys that is a figure in such a important Chicago sports market. You know, one of the most memorable players, the Golden Jet. I mean, you're pretty good with a nickname like that. So rest in peace to that legend as well. And as we begin to wrap it up, we take a look at our LeBron watch this week. And I'm thinking we're within the week, you know, within the week, next 10 days or so, that this is going to happen. He had two more 40-point games last week. It just seems like he does it on an occasion now, including 46 against the Clippers on Monday. So LeBron, he has now scored 40-plus points against every single NBA team. And I mean, obviously you got to be in the league for 20 years to do it, but an impressive accomplishment nonetheless. And then he followed it up with a fantastic showing against Boston on Saturday with 41 in an overtime loss. I do have one little note that I want to talk about real quick though about that Boston game. LeBron James, he took that layup at the end of regulation to try to, you know, put it in, you know, get the win. And he was fouled. He ran through three Celtics, and he was fouled by Jason Tatum as he went up for the layup. He missed the layup. There was no foul call. He was fouled, but the absolute fool that he made of himself afterwards is, in my opinion, what separates him from guys like Michael Jordan, guys like Magic Johnson. They didn't make a fool of themselves out there on the court. He's jumping around, screaming, flailing his arms, laying on the floor. It's like you still have overtime to play. And so it's one of those things that it's not a good look. I mean, you're supposed to be one of the greatest players of all time. You're a role model, and this is how you act. It was a foul, but put your head down and go play overtime and go win in overtime. Instead, you let that get to your head. You got Patrick Beverly now taking the camera over to a referee to show him, and now that's a technical foul, and now you're just snowballing every single problem, and now you get blown out in overtime. It's just, it's stupid, and it's one of those plays that the greatest of all time should not be making. Anyways, after that, after this good week again from LeBron, he now finds himself 117 points behind Kareem. He's got a game against Brooklyn on Monday, who he's been ruled out for, as I expected. He was going to miss a game so he can get the record in LA. That ruled out comes on Monday, so now he'll be on the road for the next three against the Knicks on Tuesday, the Pacers on Thursday, and then on the road Saturday against the Pelicans, and then I'm thinking on Tuesday at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder is going to be the day that he breaks the record. If he plays all four of those games, he's looking at an average of 29.25 points. So four games, he averages almost 30, and he's going to get that record. So keep an eye out for that, and maybe, I doubt it, but maybe we'll have the record broken by our next show Monday. If not, I'm expecting it to be that next day. So stay tuned for that as we continue with the LeBron watch and the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned to the Sports Zone next week.